Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Astros lose last night 6-4. They are swept. Sweet redemption by A.J. Hinch. He comes back in and sweeps his former team. I know. That's painful.
He's cheating. He's totally cheating.
Totally cheating.
How could you say he's not cheating when he was mind I was actually trying to make a case for it going into last night's game, but then as Lance was just spraying the ball all over the place,
acting like
he had a strike zone like 4 miles wide. I prefer to think of it as that Lance was man-spreading, that he was kind of just trying to, you know, just take up as much space as he could and brush back, like, every single Detroit Tigers batter got brushed back by Lance at some point. And you found out after the game that he was pretty damn sick. Dusty said he could barely – his legs were wobbling. He was just sick as hell.
There's probably not a good pitcher, Seth, and I consider Lance to be a good pitcher. I know that he's been injured a lot, but his stuff is really, really good. That you can tell almost right away, like, oh, he does not have it tonight. Oh, boy.
Well, when he hit Badu right in the knee, he was hitting guys in uncomfortable spots, too, in the shins and the knees.
Yes.
And
places with very little cushion.
I mean, he could have easily had 6 HBPs last night.
Yep.
Right? Didn't he? I mean, it was
all over the place.
And it wasn't like Lance up there trying to assert himself like, in the Dodgers World Series or anything. It was, he just didn't have it.
Yeah, 3 2/3, 6 earned runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. He was not good. Now, the big story with that game that's going to impact things going forward to what extent we don't know yet is that the Astros had several players, including 4 everyday regulars in the lineup, put onto the injured list because of COVID for health and safety reasons is what the team coins it as. It's obviously related to COVID in some way, whether there was a positive test, we don't know. Whether it's just contact tracing, we don't know. To what degree it's a contact trace, we don't know, because there are different degrees. If you're an extreme scrutiny or just an extended scrutiny case, I believe they call it, where you just need 2 negative tests to get off of the list. We don't know any of that because it's all happened within the last 24 hours. However, they did go through with playing this game last night, and because of that, there were a handful of Astros who Miles Straw got moved up to leadoff, Abraham Toro starting at third base, Ronnie Dawson, ever heard of him? Well, he got his major league debut, had a single, that was pretty good. Lance McCullers, though, Seth, claims that we shouldn't have even played this game last night.
Yeah, well, I'm our player rep as well, so I was dealing with a lot today. I don't really understand why we played tonight, quite honestly. Seems like the rules are different for different teams, depending on who it is, based off of the COVID issues. A lot of questions and things that we have to get figured out as a team. And hopefully in the next few days we do.
All right, and this was a recurring theme. Brandon Scott followed up, our Brandon Scott on the Zoom call with Lance followed up, and Lance reiterated his stance on whether or not the game should have even been played.
As the player rep or as the team, did y'all make the case that it wasn't safe to play? And can you take us through that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say that we felt that it would have been better if we weren't there today. I think it would have been the smartest thing to do, but we were overruled.
All right, so there you go. Now, I don't know what the rules are as far as postponing games, other than games have been postponed so far this year for
certain
reasons.
Right. Now, I think what Major League Baseball said, or was it James Click, somebody important, said that they didn't deem it a risk. So I think that when there have been postponements, it's because they feel like it's a risk for a larger outbreak, perhaps. So I guess in this, which is strange, because if you're thinking about five guys that are under observation, that potentially there's chance for a greater risk. I guess where I have my fingers crossed is that, okay, both Brantley and Lance were sick last night, so maybe those other five guys were just sick and had symptoms earlier, and maybe there's no even actual like contact other than that they were sick and they were in contact with each other, so they just wanted to be sure it wasn't COVID. You know, if you're showing symptoms but you haven't had a test yet, maybe that's all it is. That's complete and total speculation, and I've got my fingers crossed, because that would mean they'd be back relatively soon.
Yeah, well, I can't even find, Seth, where they confirm a positive case, you know, amongst a staffer,
right,
or a manager or, you know, a coach or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's where I'm like, maybe they're just operating out of an abundance of caution. You know, this takes us back to last year, I suppose, where in the shortened season, and this was the same way in football, that in those two sports, especially because they didn't have a true bubble, there was just this acceptance that, okay, you know what? Sometimes you're going to get screwed. Like, you just are. I wonder if now the standards have changed a little bit, because it feels like, all right, look, we should be pros at this point now. Like, we know that it's not the end of the world if you have to postpone a game. We've got it built into the schedule that there's extra space for all of this, especially we're a team that plays in a damn dome. Like, it's not as big a deal for us to miss out on some basically quasi-rain days. Just go ahead and postpone it. What's the big deal? So, yeah, maybe this changes the policy a little bit. It would help if the Astros had been playing well beforehand, because there's a part of me that's just like, yeah, I don't know. Were you going to win the game even with those five guys? This
right,
has been
right.
Kind of a bleep show, you know?
You could argue that some of those guys could probably use a day off, you know what
well,
I mean?
Like,
just to
right, well,
shake
I mean,
things
like,
up a little bit.
I mean, with all due respect to Lance, who was sick yesterday, you know, and not him.
Not himself is what Seth was going to say right there. Yeah, like Lance was a little bit off last night. There's no question about that. So the Astros lose last night.
I hear you.
6-4. There you go. Hey, Seth.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how are you?
Sorry, a little glitch there.
It's okay.
Yeah, no, it's not like I look. Yeah, if the Astros were going to score seven runs, then with the guys that they all missed, then so be it. But those guys had not been necessarily putting up a whole bunch of runs.
The Twitterverse, Seth, agrees with you on our assessment, our handicapping of a Baker versus Hinch fist fight. Remember how you and I were saying last night that maybe they can just decide this third game? Because the Astros are playing so badly right now. They're so bad at baseball right now that maybe we can just have the two managers get into a street fight with each other and have that decide the game. And I was cool with that because I thought Dusty Baker, even at his advanced age, he's in his 70s and A.J. Hinch is in his late 40s. I would take Baker in that. But apparently youth prevails. And of the several hundred people that voted in my poll on this yesterday, two-thirds of them agree with you that A.J. Hinch would win a fist fight to the death, or at least to a TKO with Dusty Baker.
Yeah, I was thinking that you were maybe going to suggest a trial by combat or something for the third game. Maybe that's what they should do when there are multiple COVID regulation things or COVID protocol dismissals before a game. You should say, all right, well, listen, we got to go to trial by combat and have the managers duke it out. That would be pretty bad.
Either the managers duke it out, or, as you know, in trial by combat, you get to pick your champion. So maybe instead of the managers, you pick the guy on the team that you feel most confident would win a fight to the death on the team.
I would use one of my COVID guys and just have him try to bear hug the other guy and cough into his face.
Cough all over him.
And then wait 3 to 4 weeks and see what happens.
See if it incubates, right?
Yeah. Well, because the intensity of the exposure matters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe just by coughing intensely in their face for a while.
Who would we pick on the Astros?
Well, I guess Yordan, it would seem. Now, Correa follows MMA. And I'm guessing maybe practices a little bit. Maybe he was hypothetically having an MMA sparring match with his massage therapist when he broke his ribs.
He broke the rib.
Yeah, but he's into MMA, and he's a bigger guy.
Yeah.
Not that size matters. We all know that. I'm not sitting there saying that. Because as many of you will notice, Aaron Donald just put some good work, put his hands on somebody in Pittsburgh. Aaron Donald's not the tallest fella.
Do you see
kinda
that
big,
guy's face?
Kind of big.
Guy looked like someone.
Well, think about if you're Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Think about if you're Aaron Donald. You just won defensive MVP.
Mm-hmm.
But the runner-up was T.J. Watt.
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh is your hometown.
Yeah.
So imagine Aaron Donald going back to his hometown, and I'm guessing since the end of the season, hearing nothing when he goes out but like various jabronis being like, hey, you know, TJ should have won it. And I wonder, this is complete speculation, I wonder maybe if Aaron Donald just snapped finally, and he was like one last guy, because it was at 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning when he put his hands on this fella. I wonder if this guy was a huge Steelers fan and said something about TJ.
He looks like someone taped a steak to the right side of his face. Like, that's how bruised up. Like, his eyes, it's bad.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, Aaron Donald, Defensive Player of the Year, is being sued for assault by this guy.
It always looks worse than it is. That's just, you get a little broken blood vessel and it swells right up.
Broken blood vessel?
It does sometimes. This happens sometimes in football if you get your hand stepped on.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these blood vessels on the back of your hand.
Okay.
You know? And you pop one of those things and all of a sudden your hand swells up like you got stung by 100 bees or something. And it's kind of scary. It freaks you out at first.
Okay.
And then the trainer tells you to quit being a wimp. And
that's what I just heard from you. It sounds like you're calling this guy a gigantic baby.
No.
It took a meat hook to the face.
No. I'm just saying you can't quite tell exactly how bad it was from one photo of his eye all swollen up.
Gotcha. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday, 713-572-4610, if you want to get in. What are the chances of the Texans drafting a quarterback with the 67th overall pick, and why the prospects at that spot, John McClain kind of alluded to this yesterday, why the prospects at that spot might make the locals happy? We'll talk about it next. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. So we had John McClain on yesterday for his weekly visit, and a couple interesting things that just he sort of dropped in. One was he mentioned the Philadelphia Eagles, and we were asking him about the chances of Deshaun getting traded before the draft. Remember John going something like, he said something like, well, you know, a team like the Eagles isn't going to be interested, you know, between now and then because blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, it's a weird mention because the Eagles haven't been a team. And lo and behold, there's these articles that pop up yesterday. Eagles still interested in Deshaun Watson. I'm like, McClain, you are a shifty character. The other thing, Seth, that was interesting, shifty, not often a word associated with John McClain. So the other thing, he went on an extended mention of Kellen Mond of Texas A&M, which I found to be interesting as well, and got me thinking yesterday, like, okay, as Justin Fields' pro day was going on and all those teams with picks in the upper far reaches of the first round of the draft, we're able to watch and dream about Justin Fields. Meanwhile, the Texans sit with the 67th overall pick. What if they drafted a quarterback with the 67th overall pick? What if Nick Caserio, who came from an organization that built their last two decades around the 199th pick in the 2000 draft, Tom Brady, decided to go, you know what, we don't care what round it is, we like this guy right here. Who would be some of the names? And Kellen Mond is a name that fits. Now, John Harris on his Harris 100, Seth, he's got seven quarterbacks in there. He's got the five that everybody's talking about at the top of the draft up in the, you know, the upper reaches. He's got Trevor Lawrence, number one. Zach Wilson, I think, is in the top five. The lowest of the five, I think, is Mac Jones. He's got it like 40 or something like that. Then the other two quarterbacks he's got in there, Kyle Trask of Florida by way of Manville at 92, and Kellen Mond, Texas A&M, 94. So two quarterbacks that at least would fit the profile of a quarterback that would be available with the 67th overall pick, both with local ties, by the way. Kyle Trask from the Houston area, and Kellen Mond, a Texas A&M Aggie. Do you think there's a chance that the Texans could take their potential quarterback of the future with the 67th overall pick, considering that is by far the best piece of draft equity they've got in this draft?
Yeah, I think it's possible, but I think it's with a measured dose of optimism if Caserio does it. Like, Casario's been around long. Caserio, like everybody else in the league, knows that Tom Brady is the extreme, extreme, extreme exception.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody's sitting there saying, like, well, why take a quarterback in the first round when you could find Tom Brady in the sixth? But you've got to always constantly be shooting your shot and taking a chance on some of these guys. And maybe that happens. Maybe it adds depth, whatever. At the very least, maybe you trade him away for a third, fourth, fifth round pick after you're picking somebody up as a sixth round pick at some point. I think the biggest question, and, like, immediately with Kellen Mond, what I think is, okay, if you're not a top guy, you know, if you're not a first round or top half of the second round guy, then you usually just don't have the physical skills, right? Like, there's nothing electrifying about his arm. There's nothing electrifying about his athleticism. He can run well enough. But what is it that's going to set him apart? And it's going to have to be that there's something about, if you think about, like, Tom Brady or even, you know, Drew Brees, who is a early second round pick. If you lack all the electrifying physical tools, then you better be super smart. You better have a great sense of anticipation and timing. It really, really helps to be really accurate. And Mond hasn't struck me as being incredibly accurate, but he has been very efficient, and he's been smart with the football and basically done what Jimbo Fisher has asked him to do. I guess a lot of it's going to be, okay, in their meetings with him or just in watching film, and then especially in talking to the coaches at A&M, like, what do they think about him? And, you know, and Jimbo Fisher runs as college offenses go, you know, a more pro style, there's pro concepts involved there. He's done some more things mentally that other college quarterbacks haven't done. They're going to wonder, all right, like, can this guy end up being above and beyond his physical skills?
Yeah.
And if so, if they think, it really almost comes down to that. If they think he's pretty bright, then yeah, there's a chance they'll take him in the fifth or sixth round.
Yeah. I'm kind of talking about, would they use the third round pick on a quarterback?
Oh, the third round pick?
Yeah, would they use, they need more. That'd be kind of fun, though, if they took a quarterback with the 67th overall pick. As long as it didn't prevent them, if they bottomed out and got the first overall pick or a top five pick in next year's draft, as long as it wasn't something where they felt married to whoever they took. Because let's face it, the hit rate on third round picks, it's decent draft equity, but the hit rate on it isn't great. If they've got a decent grade on somebody, if they think Kellen Mond is the 45th best player in the draft and he's there at 67, I don't know. Certainly be a more fun radio topic than them taking a safety or something like that with the 67th overall pick. I don't know if it would be the best thing in the world for the team, but it'd be a lot more fun to talk about on the radio.
I think if you think though what they're doing right now is, like, they're creating extreme competition to try to find position players that can build some kind of a basis, mm-hmm. you know, and I just don't know if, I just don't know if taking a quarterback that you don't necessarily feel incredible about is the best. It feels like they're trying to build a base for the eventual quarterback.
Yeah.
The guy that they think is going to be the guy at some point down the line. And I'd rather take my chances with a third-round offensive lineman or a third-round defensive tackle or linebacker or something like that that can be there for the guy that they feel really good about as a quarterback.
Right. No, your approach makes more sense. I'm the guy who said they should take Johnny Manziel with the first overall pick in 2014. I'll just remind you that. I'm looking at this stuff that could be kind of fun. Along those lines, they ended up taking Clowney. This is funny. Practically back-to-back texts about Clowney on the text page, Seth, 713-572-4610. This first one's from Ocho. He says, it looks like Clowney is about to ski mask the Browns for $10 million like he's done his whole career. And then two texts later, another texter says, y'all are talking about Clowney like he's an average player. He's making $10 million a year, fools. To which
that's not that much these days. Yeah. And plus, I wasn't talking about him like he's an average player at all. That's the dumbest text I've received this week.
Well, I replied to this texter and I said, A, Seth just said he's a very good player. B, he does have zero sacks since the middle of 2019.
Yeah.
And C, he's not making $10 million yet. It's up to $10 million. There's incentives in there. They're like, slow down. He ain't making the $10 million yet, dude. It's up to $10 million. He's got incentives he's got to hit. And my guess is a big part of those incentives is availability.
It's amazing, though. No, I at various times when I was talking about Clowney, I called him a very impactful player when healthy. I said he can make a huge difference in a game. I guess that guy's standard is like he expects, like an average NFL defense is full of like very impactful players and guys that can make a huge impact in the game and all of that. Like, no, that's an above average player I was describing to you. Now, he's horrible at finishing with sacks. He doesn't have the natural bend, to be able to make the micro adjustments you have to make at the end of a pass rush, but he's still an influence as a pass rusher, especially if he's got a running mate. You know, if he's got a JJ Watt, if he's got a, well, now he's got a Myles Garrett, then yeah, I think the production will come back up. The counting stats will improve. And he should be pretty good for them. But now, cause he had meniscus surgery in the offseason, that's going to be the thing moving forward that's always going to haunt him. It's been three straight years of injury issues now. You know, when he was in Houston, he had a good stretch of being healthy. But now, both with Seattle and Tennessee, he had injury issues. And now he enters this season coming off of a meniscus injury. If he plays 16 games, then maybe it won't be as big a deal. But teams are always going to be skeptical.
He'll never get a multi-year deal from anybody. I don't think. 2 years at the most.
I guess he could get a 3-year deal. It all depends on the bookkeeping and how you handle it.
Yeah, that's
true. Like where the guaranteed money is spread out.
Yeah, that's true. Voidable years and things like that.
But he's also up there in years now. I mean, it's been forever we've been talking about Clowney.
He's 28.
He's 28 years old, so, you know, he'll be pushing 30. So, yeah, as far as a 4 or 5 year deal, extremely unlikely.
Dude, he's 28, but he's like he's like a car where someone says, you know, my truck is fairly new. It's a 2019. Really? What do you use it for? I drive cross country 12 times a year.
You know, on like, dirt roads.
Right. Like he's 28 years old, but he's a 28-year-old with 215,000 miles on the odometer. All the surgery. I mean, he's had like a dozen surgeries. Hernia.
It's like marrying a 23-year-old woman that's got 18 kids. It's like, okay, well, let's just hold on a second. I'm signing on for more than I thought I was.
It's a lot of odometer,
She goes, wow, you've got a big family. I didn't know you had such a big family. I forgot to tell you, those are my children.
Right, I birthed all of them. All right, 713-572-4610 if you want to get in on the show. All right, 21 years ago yesterday, something happened that ended up ruining several different NFL franchises. We will relive the magic. Were the Texans one of those franchises? We'll let you guess. 21 years ago, the Texans weren't even born yet, yet they were ruined 21 years ago. We'll tell you what it was next. Someone just said, Sean, did y'all just well actually that texter that was flexing for Clowney making $10 million a year? Yes, I did. They deserved it. All right, they deserve.
That's our whole job as well, actually.
It is, people. 4 hours a day.
Did you guys just well actually for the last decade of your lives? Of course I did.
Well, this
of course I did.
The one I replied to, replying, yes, I did. He texted back saying nice things about the show. So I think he was kind of LOL
actually,
that we were well actually.
Actually, that guy's had other texts where he's been negative before.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know. I have no idea. I was just trying to well
step
actually
your game up,
every damn thing. It is. It's a hard thing to turn off someday. This happens with football scouts. Sometimes scouts, they get in the business of just being persnickety about every little thing and being very critical and judgmental. And then they have to remember to turn it off in their normal lives. You know, you can't.
With their wives and their kids.
You can't.
Honey,
we're instituting a new rating system on your pot broils, and it's gonna bear with me. It's a little bit confusing. Like a 6 is actually better than a 5. It's just very, but worse than a 7. Yeah,
honey, your hips are not fluid enough. Wait, what? Huh? Tom Brady was drafted.
There's like 20 characteristics to a quarterback that you would want. Like 20 characteristics to a sexual partner.
That map to quarterback traits.
Hold on a second. I'm going to write an article for Cosmopolitan magazine.
You go do that. I'm going to play this little bit of audio here. 21 years ago yesterday, Tom Brady, with the sixth round with the 199th pick overall, was drafted. If you felt a tremor in the force, that's what it was. It was the anniversary of Tom Brady being drafted in the sixth round and in the process ruining numerous NFL franchises. We'll explain how he did that. And I don't mean just by beating them in Super Bowls. I mean,
yeah, so we're not just talking about the AFC East here.
Yeah,
we're talking
about the
entire franchises and even different conferences. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Here's what it sounded like on ESPN the day that Tom Brady was drafted.
Among the last six picks taken, a familiar name if you're a college football fan, Tom Brady, the quarterback who all he did was lead this football team, put them in the right position more times than not. And when he got pulled from the game and Drew Henson came in, Michigan football was not as good as it was when Brady was in.
No question, Mike. Smart experience. This past season, he cut his interception total from 98 and a half, tossed 20 touchdown passes, only six interceptions. Through a touchdown pass, and actually all 16 games he started against Big Ten opposition during his career. Accurate. It was a very catchable ball. He really knows when to take a little off as well. And that's the key, and he stands in that pocket very tough. He'll take a hit. The question's going to be mobility. He only runs a 5.25 40. And of course, when you have those edge pass rushers, you have to avoid the initial defensive end, the initial pass rusher. Can he do that at the pro level? Going to New England, Drew Bledsoe, his forte certainly isn't mobility. It's dropping back, throwing the football. Brady can do that, and certainly New England's offense already designed for Bledsoe. Now comes Brady. Can he overcome that lack of mobility?
People love to criticize Mel Kiper. That was a pretty damn good scouting report on Tom Brady that he just, for a guy who was the 199th pick in the draft, it was pretty good stuff by Kiper there. I'm sitting here nodding my head. I'm going, yep.
Mm-hmm. He gave the right considerations though too. Like if he had said, hey, he's not going to be able to outrun pass rushers. Hey, he's not going to be mobile enough in the pocket, which is what he really wanted to say. Then he might have been screwed. Except that it was a 6th round pick, So it doesn't matter. And
at that point of the draft, other than total nut jobs and John Harris.
It's funny how things have changed, because then it was, hey, you draft a quarterback who's kind of like the starter there, Drew Bledsoe. He's a statue too. Versus now, where it's like, hey, you got an athletic quarterback. You better draft an athletic quarterback. And now it's turned into not even like, you're not even talking about drafting non-athletic quarterbacks.
Right.
Like, they're acting like Mac Jones is a statue, who just ran a 4.7 40 in his pro day.
It looks like Usain Bolt compared to Tom Brady.
I know. But by today's standards, he's much, much less athletic.
Yeah.
Well, look, I told you Kellen Mond was like an adequate enough athlete, right?
Right.
And he's like a 4.6 something guy. Like,
yeah.
He's by two decades ago standards, Kellen Mond would be like, wow, that guy can run for a quarterback. And now you're like, well, yeah, he's one of the guys. He's like your standard athlete.
So, as we learned, it turned out Tom Brady was able to avoid that first pass rusher several thousand times, to the tune of now 7 Super Bowl rings. In the process, Seth, what happened was the Patriot Way was created. And then the Patriot Way, forget about Tom Brady actually directly beating and pounding teams like the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins twice a year, every year. The franchises that Tom Brady proceeded to ruin went far beyond that, and I say that because I feel like the Texans, in their current state, are one of those teams. Had it not been for Tom Brady coming along, there never would have been a Patriot Way, and there never would have been Bill O'Brien to come down here and try to create the South version of the Patriot Way at some point. Jack Easterby came from New England as well. I think you can count the Texans among a handful of teams that Tom Brady's greatness diluted other organizations into thinking they could somehow replicate without Tom Brady. And I think it's proven even further that Tom Brady took the Brady way and picked it up and moved it to Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl. And we learned, no, you don't recreate the Patriot way. You have to import Tom Brady, actually, to get the Patriot way.
You actually have to, like, that system has a whole lot to do with Tom Brady himself.
Yeah.
Like, the Brady being a system quarterback is like, okay, yeah, I mean, if as long as you find somebody that's got a freakishly good football IQ, then yeah, I guess that's a system quarterback.
Yep.
Because a whole lot of it has to do with just being the offensive coordinator on the field. And then the other big thing is that I think just as Bill Parcells hired a certain type of coach that would go on to be good head coaches, I think Bill Parcells looked for a certain personality type. Bill Belichick, likewise, almost just has a thing for personality types of coaches who are not equipped to be head coaches, whether it's Romeo Crennel, Charlie Weiss, Matt Patricia.
Yeah.
You know, now Bill O'Brien, I think, has a head coaching mentality. He's got a few fatal flaws that hold him back. But O'Brien was done in by that notion or that O'Brien was done in by that notion that somehow knowing the system is more important than anything else. Mm-hmm. And that if you got a guy that just knows the system, then you'll be just fine, where there's obviously a lot more to it.
So the Texans, I think you could argue Brady ruined the Texans. I think Kansas City fans would say he ruined the Chiefs for a while with Scott Pioli going there and trading for Matt Cassel. I mean, is there any bigger way to try to recreate the Patriot way than to be a general manager who came off of the Belichick tree and then go get the backup quarterback to Tom Brady, who had won double-digit games the season before with Bill Belichick as the head coach? So I would think, and the Chiefs eventually bottomed out and had the first pick in the draft by 2013, a couple years later.
To be fair, yeah. To Scott Pioli and the Matt Cassel experiment, everybody always likes to point out that, hey, you know, Bill Belichick went 11-5 with Matt Cassel. Yeah. 10 of those victories went to Matt Cassel.
Right.
Because one of them, Tom Brady started. Well, yeah, a couple years later, Todd Haley would win 10 games with Matt Cassel
True.
As his quarterback.
True.
So, yeah, I don't know. Is Todd who's a better coach, Bill Belichick or Todd Haley? I'm not sure. I don't know if I could tell you at this point.
Because
Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick's record without Tom Brady as his quarterback is not a very good one.
No, it's not. It's not. That cherry-picking some nice stats there. I would say the Browns, the Romeo Crennel era Browns. My guess is the Browns. Hey, Seth, I'll say this. As someone who is an alumnus of the University of Notre Dame, Tom Brady ruined the University of Notre Dame for a while there with Charlie Weiss. People thinking Charlie Weiss could be a head coach.
You know who Charlie Weiss
ruined?
Chunky Charlie Weiss ruined Sirius Radio. You know why?
Why?
Because Ross Tucker used to have the morning show there forever. And now I think wasn't he displaced by Charlie Weiss?
Was he really?
I think he was, yeah. God. Like, hey, this guy might get a Belichick interview once a year. Let's go ahead and throw Charlie Weiss in there.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that at all.
Displacing Ross Tucker for Charlie Weiss. He got benched for Charlie Weiss. It's humiliating.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the poor guy.
It's unjust is what it is. I shouldn't say humiliating.
Right.
It's unjust. Ross Tucker is more talented than Charlie Weiss.
Indeed.
I forgot. But he never coached for Bill Belichick.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. So Tom Brady also ruined football programming on SiriusXM. Are there any success stories out there, Seth, that would defy? I mean, like Brian Flores in Miami. Okay. You know, maybe I think Miami fans are pretty happy with that. Apple falling off the Belichick tree right there. Brian Flores, so far, you know, so far so good.
Thomas Dimitroff, although I wouldn't. Thomas Dimitroff, who was the GM for the Falcons forever, and you know, they went
to a Super Bowl
there. Yep. And Thomas Dimitroff was so un-Belichick-like. And the other thing is that on the personnel side, actually, there's quite a few. I mean, Jason Licht from the Bucks is a Patriots guy. They've done all right.
Who sucked until he got Tom Brady. I'll point that out.
Yeah. Well, hey, but he won a Super Bowl, didn't he?
He did.
So, I think that on the personnel side, there have been a lot of guys that have been all right. It's just on the coaching side.
Dimitroff is interesting because there's that story he told on a podcast earlier this year. Right after he got fired by the Falcons, he did a podcast in some mountain cabin that he was in up in the middle of nowhere in Colorado, totally on brand for Dimitroff. And he told the story about, remember, he was the GM, Seth, who traded up to get Julio Jones, like traded a bleep ton of picks to move up to 6 in the draft, like traded quarterback draft equity to go draft a wide receiver. And it turns out Julio Jones is going to be a Hall of Famer. But Dimitroff told the story about how he went to Belichick to bounce the idea off of him of trading up to get Julio Jones. And Belichick gave him all these reasons why he shouldn't do it. And then he went and did it anyways. I respect that. I like that.
Well, plus, I mean, Dimitroff, his father was in the NFL forever. It's not like Bill Belichick
was
his only. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
it's
that.
Not like, yeah, it's not like Bill Belichick was his only influence. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think sometimes personnel people screw things up.
Yeah, they
what
do.
We got headlines?
They do. Yeah, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
I will start with the Astros. Couple stories with the Astros. First, let's start with on the field last night. They lose once again to the Detroit Tigers. They get swept by the Tigers. 6-4 last night was the final score. And Lance McCullers was not great. 6 earned runs, 3 1/3 innings. the Astros just have not been great for the last five games. They've lost five in a row. Their record is 6-6. The bigger story, and something we'll keep an eye on today with the news cycle, they're off today. They travel to Seattle, but four of their regulars in the starting lineup got put on the injured list for health and safety reasons. You can go ahead and read between the lines. COVID-related reasons, but the team has not clarified if there was a positive test involved, if any of these particular players tested positive. Is it contact tracing? To what degree is it contact tracing? In the short term, we just know that they're going to be out for at least a couple days, and they missed last night. Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Yordan Alvarez, Martin Maldonado. Those are the names that you need to know in all this. Now, Lance McCullers, who's the player rep for the Astros, he says, man, we shouldn't have even been playing last night.
Yeah, well, I'm our player rep as well, so I was dealing with a lot today. You know, I don't really understand why we played tonight, quite honestly. Seems like the rules are different for different teams, depending on who it is, based off of, the COVID issues. A lot of questions and things that we have to get figured out as a team. And, hopefully in the next few days we do.
It's interesting, Seth, because you and I were talking earlier in the hour about, okay, what's different about this? Because they have postponed some games this year in baseball because of COVID reasons. I need to go back and look and see exactly who was involved in the games that they postponed to see if they were divisional opponents with each other. Because this is, I wonder how much of it is, like, this is the last time the Tigers are going to be at Minute Maid Park this year, you know? Whereas if they were playing the A's and this happened, the Astros could look at it and go, okay, well, the A's come here twice more. We play them 19 times a year. Be easy enough to schedule a doubleheader with the A's somewhere down the line. But with the Tigers, they only play them once more this year. I don't even know when it is, but it's going to be in Detroit. I wonder if the scarcity with which you play the opponent factors into whether or not they play these games.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I know that at least the officially cited reason was that they didn't think there was a risk to to play the game.
Right.
So I think it might have something more to do with the number of people potentially affected, what have you. I don't know. But part of it too is, well, I guess all the alternate training sites are relatively close to people's facilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's like back in the day, if your AAA was out in California or something, then it would be all but impossible to do this because they had to drop everything they were doing. The five guys that got called up and came over on a moment's notice, got there an hour before the game. So logistically, it made sense. I think this is going to go down as one of the things that just kind of sucks in the COVID era, and some games will be postponed, some won't, but it's such a black box as to how the decisions get made. It's hard for me to be irate about the fact that this one wasn't postponed where other ones were. Lance obviously knows a whole lot more about this stuff than we do.
Yeah, and I think, to me, Seth, it's just a reminder, two things. One, okay, well, let's be glad the Astros play a sport where it's impacting one or a few of 162 games, not one or two out of 16 games like the NFL, you know, where you get a game that we had teams that got impacted by COVID because of rescheduling and postponing games, bye weeks getting moved around and things like that. So it's a very small sliver of a very, very long season. I think the other thing is just a reminder as we were sitting here when the season was starting back on April 1st, like, ah, this is awesome. We're back to normal. It's 162 game season. This feels so good. It did in that it wasn't starting in late July, but I think it's just a reminder, like, we're not totally back to normal yet. You know, when it comes to it, we can still get games randomly postponed out of nowhere for reasons that have nothing to do with baseball injuries.
I mean, regardless of COVID, I would have felt more irate about this game not being postponed if there hadn't been four straight games where the Astros basically had no chance of winning the game.
Yeah, they weren't competitive.
Leading up to that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Saturday, they were down 4-0 before they scored a run. Monday, they were down 4-0 again in the third inning that time. Tuesday, they were down 5-1 in the fourth inning. Wednesday, down 3-0 in the second. Last night, down 6-0 in the I went in reverse order there. Last night down 6-0.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah. So they're getting down early in these games. Now at least they showed.
Oh,
some
no! Wait. Well, I read Wednesday. Yeah, the Wednesday. I was reading off McTaggart's tweet. It was 3-0 in the second when he tweeted that. So
yeah.
Obviously, it ended up being 6-0 in the fourth.
Yeah, they fought back at least last night. Look, if we're looking at the game independent of all the COVID issues, As I was watching that game from beginning to end last night, and they're at least getting guys on base late in the game to give themselves a chance. I mean, that's kind of, it's a long season. I mean, they're going to wind up hitting the baseball. I think they're going to be fine in all this, but that's, it was a very rocket feel to the last five games, Seth, where, oh, I'm getting excited about this season. Oh, wait, no, they're losing five in a row now. Damn.
I do have to on one thing where you accused Kyle Tucker of only being good for solo home runs, where he's driven in a whole bunch of runs this year, Sean.
Yeah, just, I know, like, it feels like, no, I know he's driven in a bunch of runs when I tweeted that, but it feels like his, it feels like he's the master of the solo home run in the eighth inning of blowout games. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, I will actually, you as a stat guy, he's actually been pretty good in the clutch. With two outs, runners in scoring position, he's got a 1.024 OPS. With in a tie game, he's hitting .322 with a 1.043 OPS. He's, Kyle Tucker is more clutch than you want to believe he is. Your selective hatred for Kyle Tucker, it bothers me as a stat nerd.
Yeah, let me give you some numbers. My tweets have gotten 4.1 million impressions in the last 28 days. So take that, put it in your Twitter pipe, and smoke it.
So what are you bragging on, just like misrepresenting things about baseball
bragging
players?
About my,
what are you, Skip Bayless?
I'm bragging about my following. He makes $6 million a year. Yeah.
You've gotten impressions based off of maligning Kyle Tucker unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
I will not stand for it.
Mm-hmm.
As somebody who's been an adamant defender of Kyle Tucker for just whenever it became convenient because he was actually playing well.
Right.
I went from saying, like, how the hell was this guy the untouchable one, to now, like, yeah, don't touch him.
Yeah. Shifting gears here in headlines, Deshaun Watson. The latest on Deshaun Watson came down late last night. Tony Busby putting out a statement that the Busby Law Firm filed its 23rd case against Deshaun Watson for allegations of assault and harassment. The woman in this newest case did not file as a Jane Doe. Instead, she chose to name herself. The cases are now consolidated without an official order in one court. All women have voluntarily identified themselves. These brave women now feel emboldened and will not be intimidated. Again, this is Tony Busby speaking, not me. This is his statement. Finishing up here, as said before many times, we're proud to represent these women to seek justice on their behalf and stand up for survivors everywhere. Time's up. That's how he finishes that statement. Now, Seth, we should clarify a couple of things here with respect to these plaintiffs. 23 total lawsuits have been filed. However, 22 of the women are remaining for now in lawsuit mode against Deshaun Watson. One of the 23 has pulled out because she did not want to disclose her actual name. The other 22 are going to disclose their actual names and continue pushing forward with litigation against the Texans quarterback.
Which is, I think for some of the preliminary arguments people had in defense of Deshaun, I'll just say, just from listeners and what have you, you know, some people said, well, you know, they were looking for an easy anonymous handout. So far, that at least, except in one case where the woman has said that it's that there's a chance that she might be coming back, or Busby said she might be coming back. I mean, so far that hasn't been true. So it's because they're not any longer anonymous, quote unquote, handouts. The other was when, you know, I said yesterday this could have gone away potentially just for $100,000 or less than $100,000, because that was the initial offer. And then it was the subsequent publicity that brought more people into the fold when Tony Busby really got involved and started pressing it. Somebody texted us and said, well, you do it once and then everybody's asking for a handout. My response to that would be, well, you're presuming that the woman didn't have a valid complaint in that. So that's still that's still a point of contention. Two, have you been paying attention to what's happened since he refused that $100,000?
Right.
Like, was it going to be worse? Was he going to get 21 other people coming forward if they'd never heard of this suit or whatnot? Hopefully what would have happened is, let's say hypothetically Deshaun had committed what happened versus plaintiff number one. Then maybe it would have scared him straight, and he would have stopped all this nonsense if he did indeed do what he's alleged to have done. And then, you know, all the better for society, and then Deshaun himself would have been a better financial strategy, and certainly from a PR standpoint, a better strategy. This, like, for trying to get out of settling for $100,000 or less, this is turned into quite the conundrum for Deshaun Watson.
It has, and they There's an article in the Washington Post by a writer by the name of Will Hobson, who is going to be on In the Loop at 11:40 today. And I would recommend going and reading this article. He did an interview with Tony Busby. I guess he spent about an hour talking to Tony Busby just about this whole thing, about the whole saga. And Deshaun Watson's inner circle has, I think, rightfully taken a lot of heat in how they've handled this and how they've coached Deshaun to handle this, you know, including putting a statement out after the very first settlement attempt by Ashley Solis, plaintiff number one. They've just not handled it very well at all. They botched this thing, and it's some really good insight. Now, it's from Busby's perspective. We should point that out. But he talks about the conversations that he had with Watson's camp pre-Rusty Harden. He talks about some of his conversations with Rusty Harden since Watson hired Rusty Harden. And I would say, Seth, that the most intriguing part of this to me is where Tony Busby talks about what he told Scott Gatfield, who was... That was Deshaun's lawyer before Rusty Harden. He's the general counsel for the sports agency that handles Deshaun Watson, called Athletes First. And this guy clearly, I guess, didn't know who Tony Busby was, or was kind of very dismissive of the settlement request for Ashley Solis, plaintiff number one. And according to Busby, this is what he said to Scott Gatfield. When Gatfield finally... was requesting Busby to essentially negotiate against himself in a settlement. He said, I told them, let me tell you how this is going to go down. I'm going to file the case. The press is going to pick it up. It's going to be a circus, and Deshaun's going to have to hire Rusty Harden. And here we are. Yeah. He was 100% right about that. He said the guy being Gatfield, was so clueless about how things work. And it's a really interesting read that does not do favors for anybody who's in that Deshaun Watson inner circle, other than Rusty Harden, who Busby says is being dealt a really, really tough hand in this whole thing.
Let's see. Busby, another article, another snippet from this article. Busby had filed 3 lawsuits against Watson by then. This is when he first started talking to Rusty Harden. Mm-hmm. He told Harden he had another 4 ready to go. Busby had tried to settle weeks earlier, he told Harden, but he had been rebuffed by the quarterback's management firm, whom Busby characterized to Harden as arrogant, dismissive jackasses.
Yeah.
So remember when we first read those email exchanges and it sounded like, man, Busby sounded genuinely offended by this Scott Gaffigan or whatever his name
Gatfield.
Is? What is it, Gatfield?
Gatfield.
Scott Gatfield, the fancy lawyer from Yale, that thought he was just going to intimidate the yokels from Houston, Texas, apparently.
His hayseed from Houston.
Yeah, yeah. I got these clowns from Houston trying to settle this case, which, frankly, the alleged facts don't even seem like it's a crime. Which, that part of it, I need a lawyer to explain to me how the alleged facts didn't seem like a crime. Because the alleged facts, well, I guess maybe at that point, maybe the alleged facts weren't how they were worded in the lawsuit, whatever it might be. He didn't know what he was messing with. He did not know what he was messing with. And, like, he might have single-handedly, just from a legal perspective, cost his client millions upon millions upon millions of dollars because he didn't take the yokels from Houston, Texas seriously.
Oh, on
now,
every
obviously,
level.
Obviously, Deshaun is allegedly or potentially most at fault here. But just from a strictly legal perspective, Deshaun's agency really screwed the pooch on this one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Deshaun is he's the one who allegedly did all these things. But yeah, Seth, think of the Pandora's box that got opened by them not settling with that first... With the first plaintiff on every level, not just the potential settlements, the damage to Deshaun's reputation, the lost sponsors that he's never going to get back, probably.
Now, I will say that given the behavior described by all the plaintiffs, I'm not so sure that settling the one case, if Deshaun was doing what he's alleged to have done, let's say the defendant, like let's just say hypothetically, if a defendant was guilty of doing all the things that he was alleged to have done, I'm not so sure that $100,000 would have taught him the lesson. Yeah. He might have, like that hypothetical defendant might have felt like, well, you know what, price you got to pay, you pay, you play. Like the depths and the sheer volume and numbers of offenses It was already so extreme that maybe he just would have kept on doing it, and that he needed some kind of lesson like this.
As long as we're talking about legal matters, let's touch on this real quick here in headlines. It appears that Rams defensive tackle Aaron Donald will be facing an assault charge in Pittsburgh. Lawyer Todd Hollis told KDKA that it's a TV station up there, that he is filing an assault charge against Aaron Donald on behalf of his client, DeVincent Spriggs. Hollis said he will file those charges at Pittsburgh Police Zone 3. According to Hollis, Spriggs was allegedly assaulted early last Sunday between 3 and 4 a.m. Nothing good happens between 3 and 4 a.m. He also provided a picture that shows Spriggs with his right eye swollen shut, but there aren't other details about the alleged incident. Of course, for those who don't realize, Aaron Donald grew up in Pittsburgh. He went to the University of Pittsburgh before being drafted by the Rams with the 13th overall pick in the 2014 draft. So I've not seen anything from Donald's camp, Seth, that either denies or that acknowledges this lawsuit. The only thing I've seen visually is the picture of DeVincent Spriggs, which it looked like if it was Aaron Donald or whoever caught him with a left hook, seemed to catch him flush. His eye is swollen shut.
Yeah, who knows, like, at this point exactly what happened and whether it was a one punch, was it a beat down, why, you know, who instigated all that stuff.
I like your hypothesis, by the way.
My hypothesis was that however this specific incident happened, Aaron Donald is from Pittsburgh. This year he won the defensive MVP. The runner-up was T.J. Watt, who plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans were quite upset with that outcome. And I wonder what it's like when you come back to your hometown. He played at Pittsburgh, the University of Pittsburgh. He's from the Pittsburgh area. What's it like when you come back in the offseason and probably every time you go out, different people are coming up to you telling you T.J. Watt should have won the defensive MVP?
That gets maybe frustrating.
He just heard enough by that point. That's my theory. That's my hypothetical.
And I'm guessing alcohol is involved in your theory, given that this happened between 3 and 4 in the morning?
Yeah. I know you were joking when you said nothing good happens between 3 and 4 a.m. in the morning. Or it was a play on our old – my college coach used to say nothing good happens after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought it was a weird thing to say to young men because, you know, some really good things happen
after
midnight.
Did you see it as demotivating?
Yeah, well, it kind of I felt like he lost credibility. Like, I'm like, shoot it straight, Coach Hoffer. Like, some good stuff happens after midnight. It's just the problem is that almost all the really bad stuff happens after midnight, too.
Right.
So there's a give and a take there, right? There's the profit and a loss. There's a risk-reward ratio. So most of the bad stuff happens after midnight. But you got to concede that also some really pretty good stuff happens after midnight,
Oh, yeah,
midnight
and that'll
too.
Go real well for the college coach that lists all the good things that can happen after midnight when that gets leaked by one of his players.
Yeah. It was like every single time he would say that. He would say it two or three times a year. You look to your buddy who was with you when something really good happened after midnight last week. Give each other like a with you high five each other with your eyeballs.
That's funny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.